Appeal number 053944, Lieberman versus Monahan. Mr. Stein.
May it please the court. My name is Gil Stein. I represent the appellant, Brad Lieberman. The respondent violated Mr. Lieberman's constitutional right to due process by holding him for almost 5 years without a probable cause hearing. Two issues are before the court arising from this claim. First, whether the district court incorrectly determined that Mr. Lieberman procedurally defaulted his claim. And second, whether the district court incorrectly determined that Mr. Lieberman's claim is not cognizable on federal habeas review. After discussing what Mr. Lieberman did, I'll spend most of my time talking about why the state's arguments to the contrary are mistaken. Mr. Lieberman did not procedurally default his claim because it called to mind a constitutional right and alleged facts well within the mainstream of constitutional litigation, as required by this court's holding in Periquette and numerous other decisions. In the Circuit Court of LaSalle County, Mr. Lieberman filed a pro se brief in which he stated that he has, quote, an absolute constitutional right to have a probable cause hearing conducted within the mandated 72-hour time frame. Other language to that effect is also in the brief. In the Third District Appellate Court, Mr. Lieberman filed a pro se brief again, stating that he had brought a, quote, constitutional claim before the circuit court below. When Mr. Lieberman was unsatisfied with his appointed counsel's superseding brief, he filed a motion to supplement that brief. That motion was never considered by the district court below because the respondent failed to submit it in violation of Rule 5. That undisclosed motion argued in support of Mr. Lieberman's, quote, claim of constitutional error, cited two U.S. Supreme Court cases to argue that respondent's attempt to commit Lieberman, quote, threatened his liberty interest, triggered procedural due process guarantees that, quote, entitle him to a probable cause hearing, and that due process constrains the respondent's ability to deprive him of his liberty interest. Then Mr. Lieberman filed a reply brief in support of his appeal, which the district court below also never considered because the respondent failed to tender that as well in violation of Rule 5 into the record. That reply cited federal due process clause, relevant U.S. Supreme Court cases, and expressly asserted Mr. Lieberman's federal due process claim. Finally, in the Supreme Court of Illinois, even the respondent admits that Mr. Lieberman presented his claim in the form of a petition for leave to appeal that described it as a federal due process violation and again cited pertinent U.S. Supreme Court case law.
Can you turn now to his due process claim? Because my big problem with this is that Mr. Lieberman's counsel made repeated requests in the state court proceedings to postpone the probable cause hearing. When the counsel was evaluating his due process claim, there were all kinds of things going on in the state court. And so it appears to me that the state has been ready to proceed with the probable cause hearing since January 10th, 2000, and only because Mr. Lieberman or his counsel were filing motions or filing appeals when motions were denied, that's the whole reason he hasn't had his hearing. So correct me if I'm wrong.
And didn't the state also have a doctor ready on June 10th to testify at the probable cause hearing? And Mr. Lieberman did not want to proceed with that?
They did, Your Honor. The argument that Mr. Lieberman postponed his own probable cause hearing only carries weight up to the point, at most, if that's in fact what he did and if that is really something he could have done, up until the time when the mandate issued from the Illinois Supreme Court. It then took 2.5 years after that time to give him finally a probable cause hearing. So whatever he did, the clock started ticking when the mandate issued from the Illinois Supreme Court. And the resulting prejudice will be demonstrated from that additional delay if only we focus on that, which we're not conceding that we should. But if that was only the time, we can demonstrate the prejudice from that period of time as well.
But can you, under the circumstances, sort of just sit back and do nothing? I don't see any request that was ever made after that January 10th date saying, hold on, I want to have a hearing to determine whether I'm still a danger or whatever. And if you don't ever insist on that, where do we go? You know, in the real world here, how does that get done if you don't, if initially you say, I don't want a hearing, I want to pursue whether I'm subject to this law, which apparently is what he did, whether rape was a covered offense or something. But if you never insist on hearing and you purposely do not want to have a hearing when it's ready to go, it seems to me maybe the clock doesn't really start to run until you raise your hand and say, hold it, I want a hearing. And that is never done here. Now, it doesn't have much to do with procedural default, but it, as an alternatively on the merits, whether there was any violation.
As a practical matter, Your Honor, and I'm glad you asked that question because it allows me to bring up something that's even more problematic about this case, and that is the issue Your Honor's question goes to. Mr. Lieberman did not put the state in an untenable position by asking at the time on January to hold off on the probable cause hearing as his attorney did. It does not doom them to facing the argument that we have here today just because he tried to postpone the hearing and then comes back and says, well, now you've also violated my due process right. The way that that would work practically is the state's argument to that effect implies that he essentially somehow waived his right to now assert a due process violation because he himself tried to postpone the 72-hour probable cause hearing. That argument has no merit because at the moment he supposedly made that waiver, he could only have made it if it was knowing and intelligent. That's the standard for waiving a constitutional right. And all that had to happen at that moment was for the state to ask the court or for the court to do so on its own to say, Mr. Lieberman, we understand you're going to ask to postpone your probable cause hearing, but there's a duty here to give you that hearing within 72 hours. Do you understand that you are knowingly and intelligently waiving your right to due process in order for you to pursue this other challenge to the statute's applicability to your case? Otherwise, Mr. Lieberman is put between a rock and a hard place, the precise type of situation that the Supreme Court in Simons versus United States said is unacceptable.
Yeah, but his counsel didn't even raise that. He didn't even raise the waiver issue. In other words, if counsel was a little unsure, was he pro se at that point? Was he still pro se?
In January of 2000.
In January 2000.
No, he was represented by counsel at that
moment.
Right.
So if counsel was a little confused about, you know, how do we preserve this? You know, I'm concerned because he's sitting here and he hasn't had a hearing. Counsel could have even put that forward to the court, not made the request to have the hearing right away, not knowing the impact it might have on all the matters that were filed, but could have raised that to the court. That wasn't even done, was it?
That was not done, but the burden was not on Mr. Lieberman's attorney to make sure that he is afforded that knowing and intelligent waiver. The burden lies clearly under the statute and under due process on the state to make sure that Mr. Lieberman gets his timely probable cause hearing.
So then you would like us to, I mean, the rule you would like us to adopt then would be that when it's you're trying to determine what your rights are, which is what he was trying to determine under the statute, because he's trying to determine whether or not his conviction qualifies, and therefore he has to be subject to this statute, the commitment statute, that even though he is affirmatively making these filings and his counsel is making these filings, that the court has to then ask, you know, are you sure you really want to file these things? You know, basically you're saying the court has to verify, yes, he's filing it, and then advise him that what he's doing is putting off the very hearing that he's trying to get clarification on?
It's the same admonition that a person receives when they decide to take a bench trial, not a jury trial. It's the same admonition they receive when they want to...
No, but aren't we talking apples and oranges when it's a bench trial? Yeah, of course, if you're going to trial and you give up a jury trial and you want to do a judge trial, that's different. But the court was not litigating the underlying merits.
I would argue, Your Honor, that there was a constitutional right at stake at that moment, and Mr. Lieberman had a duty to be informed that he was relinquishing one right for another. Otherwise, he has to sacrifice one for another without a knowing and intelligent waiver, which is effectively what the argument is when it's said that he caused the delay in his own probable cause hearing by choosing to enforce his right to due process and challenge the statute. I'll reserve the balance.
And do you have any case law to support that theory?
Yes, Your Honor. I would cite the court to Simons versus United States, where the Supreme Court said that a defendant cannot be obligated to either give up a valid Fourth Amendment claim in that case or waive his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. The court said, in those circumstances, we find it intolerable that one constitutional right should have to be surrendered in order to assert another.
Yeah, but that's not really our scenario.
Your Honor, I think, may I respond to your question?
Yeah, because that had to do with whether someone would take the Fifth when you're trying to determine what's going on in terms of the Fourth Amendment claim. Wasn't that the choice that had to be made?
That was.
Yes, so the defendant had to be advised that, you know, if you proceed on this Fourth Amendment claim and you actually testify, you could be giving up your Fifth Amendment right, and then explain what that meant. Of course, that case makes sense, but that's not the situation we're dealing with here.
May I respond, Judge? In this case, Mr. Lieberman was asked to have a choice. Either challenge the statute's applicability to you, in which case you will postpone your right to a probable cause hearing within 72 hours. Or don't challenge the statute's applicability, accept it that you are subject under this act, and we'll go ahead and give you the 72-hour probable cause hearing. Those are two different aspects of his constitutional right to due process. He had to choose between them, whereas in Simons, there was a Fourth Amendment and a Fifth Amendment issue, two different clauses. Nonetheless, here, the analogy is solid because these are two different aspects of his right to due process. He's forced to choose, and he never made a knowing and intelligent waiver of one or the other.
But are you saying that he would have had to give up his claim that he was not subject to this act had he gone ahead with a probable cause hearing?
No, Judge.
Could not reserve that issue. I mean, his issue was that there's certain identifiable offenses that trigger this additional commitment, civil commitment. My conviction doesn't qualify. I want to keep that issue in the case, but I want to go ahead now and have a probable cause hearing, because if I win that, I'm out. So this other issue isn't going to be important to me anymore. But as I understood your answer to Judge Williams, you're saying that had he had a choice, either a 72-hour probable cause hearing within 72 hours or making this claim, and if he did one, he couldn't have the other. Is that what you're saying?
No, Judge Evans, let me clarify. The choice, it was only a choice of either or insofar as the state would say, we are now going to be forced into a situation where every guy that comes up for his probable cause hearing can guarantee himself a habeas release down the line if all he does is cook up some argument that will cause it to be delayed for whatever reason. In this case, it was Mr. Lieberman's challenge to the act's application to him. And I'm saying that's not the untenable position the state is in if all that happened was this. If he was advised, look, if you want to challenge the act's application, that's fine. But understand that you are waiving the right to then come back and complain about the fact that you weren't given a probable cause hearing within 72 hours and that maybe someday down the line will result in a habeas release. You have a choice to make at that moment. So he can still challenge the act's application, but he would have to understand that by doing that, he is sacrificing the right to then say, oh, you didn't give me my probable cause hearing on time, so now I'm going to file a habeas and demand my release.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Iskovich.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Stein, may it please the Court, my name is David Iskovich. I'm with the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondent. This case is procedurally complex, Your Honors, but on the merits it couldn't be more clear-cut. On January 10th, 2000, the state was ready to proceed at a probable cause hearing by statute. The trial court, Judge Wood, and the Circuit Court of Cook County said, I see you have your doctor here. You're ready to proceed, but I want to settle this issue. What's that issue? Well, it's an issue that was raised by petitioner contesting the applicability of the Sexually Violent Persons Act on him insofar as he was convicted of rape in the early 1980s. That statute was later amended titled as criminal sexual assault. And Mr. Lieberman was well within his rights to make this pre-probable cause challenge and did so. Judge Wood considered the issue and decided it was without merit, and petitioner, again within his rights, filed an interlocutory appeal, took it to the Illinois Appellate Court, and was initially successful, as a matter of fact. later took it to the Supreme Court, and it was back on remand.
I don't think really quarrel with that. Could have been handled better in the state court. That could have had the 72, had the probable cause hearing right at that point, and subject to his right to raise the issue on appellate review of his being subject to the act. Why didn't the judge either engage in the kind of colloquy that would result in a on-the-record knowing and intelligent waiver of this right to this hearing? And that didn't happen here.
It didn't happen, Judge, but to my knowledge, an independent claim that Mr. Lieberman's waiver here was not knowingly or intelligently made, akin to a waiver of other constitutional rights, I don't believe is an issue that's been raised by petitioner until oral argument. The judge didn't do it, and there's no constitutional, under the circumstances, no constitutional rule or Supreme Court case I'm aware of that under these circumstances, the judge, when faced with a clear indication by counsel that they didn't want to do a probable cause hearing but wanted to proceed with the interlocutory appeal, that would afford petitioners such as Mr. Lieberman any habeas relief or any state court relief, as a matter of fact. One thing that counsel did say was that there are two issues before the court, the issue of the procedural default and the issue of cognizability. We disagree. The merits of this issue are solidly before the court. Judge Anderson, in his order, the last paragraph on page 10, held that there was no due process violation because the trial court or the state or whoever Mr. Lieberman is contending violated his rights here unreasonably delayed the probable cause hearing because all of the delay was attributable to Mr. Lieberman himself. And that delay includes the delay that was apparent on remand. I won't go through all of the dates and transcripts of which this court has agreed to take judicial notice, but those transcripts show that even after remand, Mr. Lieberman continued to assert that he was entitled to various relief, such as a FRI hearing, bond, a sentence recalculation. All these considerations were in front of Judge Porter. Judge Porter agreed to hear them, and transcripts show he was very patient in hearing them. And continually, toward the end of this five-year period in which Mr. Lieberman didn't have a probable cause hearing, Judge Porter was even getting a bit impatient about holding a hearing and continued to defer a holding out of consideration of Mr. Lieberman's continued collateral and other collateral attempts to obtain relief, whether in state or federal court.
And then was Lieberman actually asking for those? Well, Lieberman was actually asking for those continuances, correct?
Absolutely, Judge.
Yeah.
I was at many of these hearings personally, and so was my able opponent. And at each of them, Mr. Lieberman asserted through counsel that he didn't want to do a probable cause hearing.
And getting back to that initial request when he was objecting, he would have preserved it. I mean, it would have been preserved in the record even if the proceeding had gone forward.
Sure, Judge. There's no reason.
But as Judge Evans pointed out, no one articulated that on the record.
No one articulated that on the record, Judge. But again, nothing precluded Mr. Lieberman from asserting there that I want my probable cause hearing today, but I'm going to also pursue other avenues of relief. We wouldn't be here today if that happened. If there are no further questions, I rest on my brief with respect to the default question and ask the court to affirm Judge Anderson's decision to deny habeas relief. I thank the court.
David. Thank you. Your time is up, but we'll give you a minute. We used a lot of your time and your rebuttal time in asking some questions. So generous, we'll give you an extra minute.
I thank the court. Since this seems to be an issue of concern, and there's really no disputing the language that was used throughout the state court briefs, that they did fairly present the claim. And there's no dispute either that this claim is cognizable. Indeed, the respondent doesn't even argue that point in their brief. It's all but conceded. I'll address this point about the choice. Mr. Lieberman's counsel in January asked to postpone the probable cause hearing because he wanted to challenge the applicability of the statute to Mr. Lieberman. At that moment, our point is the burden rested on the state It says so in the statute. Mr. Lieberman was in the state's custody. At that point, they had to say, Judge, we have a burden that we want to lift off our shoulders. If Mr. Lieberman is going to seek to challenge the act, we just want to make it clear that the burden is no longer on us, therefore, to give him a probable cause hearing within 72 hours, because that's not going to happen anymore, because he wants to proceed all the way up as far as it takes to challenge the act's application to him. Nothing like that ever happened. The burden remained on the state, and nothing was ever said. And now Mr. Lieberman was forced in a situation of saying, okay, I've got this act that doesn't apply to me. I have a due process right to challenge its application. But then again, if I do so, later on down the line, they're going to say that I postponed my probable cause hearing, and I didn't know at the time that that was going to be the case. I didn't know I was waiving, which is effectively the argument that counsel is correct, was not raised in the briefs, because I'm making it in response to a question that came up here.
Yeah, and so there was no affidavit filed by Lieberman indicating that he had confusion about what right would be preserved either, right?
He didn't even know it was going to be an issue. He didn't even know he had to file an affidavit. Nobody foresaw that 5 years later the state would turn around and blame him for exercising his due process right to challenge the act's application as an excuse for his not getting his probable cause hearing on time. Nobody ever knew. He should have been informed, and then the state would be covered today. And they could have said, no, you were told. You filed an affidavit. You got an instruction.
And, of course, this is not an argument you made in your briefs or to the district court.
Nobody made this argument. It didn't come up until now because Your Honor raised the question of, you know, what choice did he have at the moment? Didn't you do it on your own? So I'm making it now in response to these questions, which seems to be an important issue for the court.
Let me ask, at the risk of prolonging this anymore, it's May 2nd, 2007. Is he still in state custody? Has he had a hearing?
Mr. Lieberman had his probable cause hearing in November of 2005. Right. He then went on to have a trial.
Reviews of that status, so that... Once you're civilly committed here?
He was found probable cause. There was a trial after that a year later, and the jury found him to be a sexually violent person, and he is in state custody. He's never been let out after serving 20 years of his sentence with perfect behavior. He's still in state custody.
He has periodic opportunities to have that issue revisited, I assume, under Illinois law.
Once it's...
All of a sudden he'd claim, I'm no longer.
He'll never have the opportunity to challenge his eligibility if there's probable cause.
No, not that, but his continued susceptibility to being a sexually violent person. You know, sometimes you have too many birthdays, and then you're no longer subject to that.
Once a year, he can challenge that, Judge.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Both sides for fine presentations here.